ISKCON
founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananda Gauti Vaishnavarin ki jai, Namacharya Srila Vidas Thakur ki jai, Ramse Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gora Vakta Vrindi Gijaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopadvata Sayam Kundrada Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindavanam Kijaya Maturadam Kijaya Navadipadam Kijaya Jagannatha Swami Kijaya Yamanamai Kijaya Shrimati Vasi Devi Kijaya Samaveda Vakta Vrindi Gijaya Gora Premananda Hari Hari. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Govinda. So, Omagana Timiranda Shahananjana. Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. So, last week we had the commemoration of the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And later on, next year, we'll have the appearance day, and it's in February, of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So the question is, why are we celebrating the appearance, and specifically, why are we celebrating a disappearance of a particular individual? And why celebration? We're using that word celebration. Sometimes I use the word commemoration. Well, the reason is that when a great personality who is coming from the spiritual world, that's called a Shakta Shavatar, appears, his appearance and disappearance is also transcendental. As Krishna says in the Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yoveti Tatva. Yes, one who knows the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities, and we also take indirectly Krishna's disappearance from this world, doesn't have to take birth again. Why is that? Because one understands the purpose of the appearance of Krishna. Not simply understanding that Krishna appeared in Mathura and then Krishna left this world in a particular way, which we don't like to tell that story, but to understand why Krishna came down. So we're trying to understand why this great personality, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, came down. He's called a Shaktavesh avatar. Shaktavesh avatar, you've heard the word avatar before. The word means who crosses down, the person who crosses down. Avatara. And so, not only does God come down from time to time, as he says in the Gita, what does he say in the Gita? Anyone know? Yada. Bhavati Bharata. See, Veda's persona right there. So, whenever there is a decline in religion and a predominant rise in irreligion, then Krishna comes down. So, Krishna also sometimes sends people down because there's a lot of declines in religion and irreligion. A prominent irreligion is occurring. So Krishna, I guess Krishna sometimes wants to send some of his devotees down instead of doing it all himself. So therefore, and he wants to give his devotees credit. Like our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada said, that Krishna could have spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and the devotee by himself, Lord Chaitanya could have done that. And the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, so why did he do it? And Prabhupada said, to give you credit. So we can get some credit, although it's being done by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna sends his devotees down to glorify them. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is one of those devotees. And of course, it's not the exact same scenario that occurred 5,000 years ago when Krishna appeared with all of his devotees to really wipe out a good portion of the Kshatriyas on the Earth planet. Because in Kali Yuga, we don't want to wipe anyone out. We want to reform them. Just like there's different philosophies of justice. And we believe in reformatory justice. not simply punitive justice. It's not that we want to punish people. We want to reform them. So in this Kali Yuga, Krishna sends down people to reform everyone, because basically everyone needs reformation in Kali Yuga. Because Kalo Shudra Sambhavat, basically everybody is really challenged in Kali Yuga. So therefore, Bhakti Shiva Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared. Now, the problem that he had to deal with was actually a philosophical problem more than anything else. And we're going to talk about this. So here he is. Here, this is a picture. He's also known as Nrisimha Guru. Now, the word Nrisimha means like Lord Nrisimhadev, like half man, half lion, because he was very ferocious in dealing with what we call apasiddhantas. Now, apasiddhantas or apasampradayas are deviations from the understanding that is there in the Vedic literatures, that is there in pure religion, that Krishna taught. And so, a sampradaya, let's go back a little bit. A sampradaya means a disciplic succession. So, as Krishna states in the Gita, evam parampara pratam, what's the rest of that? He says, this science was taught in a chain of disciplic succession. Chain of disciplic succession means originally there's Krishna, Krishna teaches someone else, like in the case of our disciplic succession, that's Lord Brahma, and then Lord Brahma teaches someone else, that's Naramuni, then Naramuni Vyasa all the way down to the present age. But Krishna states in that verse that sometimes the disciplic succession gets, what? Broken. And the strength of a chain is determined by what? Its weakest link. So if something gets broken, then Krishna has to come down and reestablish again, which, at least the spiritual thing, Krishna has to reestablish it again, which he did in the Bhagavad Gita. So what got broken before Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared was the correct understanding of what Vaishnava spiritual dharma was. And there were so many deviant so-called disciplic successions that he had to deal with. Now, here's a picture of our disciplic succession coming down to Srila Prabhupada. So what happened is that his father was a great pure devotee and also Shaktivesh avatar. His father's name was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His father saw all that happening. And basically he preached very strongly, wrote many books, but he needed someone who could come down and push and deal with all these deviant philosophies. Now Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a householder. He had children, you know, family, and everything to take care of. And he wanted a son who could take sannyas, who would be the right-hand man of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, the personal assistant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he could carry out this mission, which was impelling Bhaktivinoda Thakur to pray to the Lord, and also causing pain in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's heart, seeing the deviation from the true understanding. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the misunderstandings or apasampradayas that were there. One of the, you know that person? Anyway, we're just using actors in this particular case. So, I didn't know it was someone that I knew. Anyway. So one of the deviations was something called the caste Goswami, the family of Goswamis. In fact, some people, Goswami means basically a spiritual leader, someone who controls the senses. It's not meant to be hereditary title. Although in India, you'll find, especially in Vrindavan, many people have this particular title, and they would say that we are the carriers of the Sampradaya or the teachings, the spiritual teachings given to us by Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and everybody else is much lower, just because we happen to be born in a particular family. So these are the caste Goswamis. Something very similar is the Smartha caste Brahmanas. And the Smartha caste Brahmanas are persons born not in Goswami families, but people born in caste Brahminical family. What I mean by caste is that it's a tradition that if, I'm not saying it's a bona fide tradition, but it's a tradition that if your father is a Brahmin or a teacher, then you're automatically a Brahmin or a teacher. Now, that's not so intelligent. I mean, let's say my father, he wasn't, but let's say my father, for example, was a surgeon. Let's take an interesting type of surgeon, an eye surgeon. Okay, so because my father was a surgeon, then I'm a surgeon. So Rishikesh should have some problems with your eyes. Just come into my house later on, we'll take care of you. We'll take your cataracts out, and won't be any problems. Because my father, I'm in the surgeon family. Not very intelligent. So, because sometimes you find a father who is a surgeon and his son is a truck driver. Right? And the same way we find people who are Brahmins and they have children and they work in the Research Triangle Park. That's nothing against the Research Triangle Park, but you know. They may not be qualified to do a hum, to a fire sacrifice, right? Just because they have the name Sharma, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Novedi, Univedi, whatever. So, that's the caste Brahmins, I think. But that's not really what a Brahmin is. A Brahmin is a Brahmin by what? Quality. Krishna says in the Gita, here's another verse for you. Chaturvarnam, Ayashrishtam. Wow. He's great. So, you have to come to all my classes. So, Krishna says in the Gita that there are different castes, but someone is assigned a particular duty in society according to his nature and his work. That's guna and karma, not according to his birth. So many people are saying, because of my birth, I should be, you know, considered a very elevated spiritual person. So this is one, that's another deviation that Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur had to do with, deal with. Here's another one called Prakriti Sahaja, which basically means to take things very cheaply. For example, there's different stages of spiritual advancement. In the beginning stage, one is working on something called anarthas. Anarthas means things you don't want, like your old car. Nobody thought that was funny? Anyway, it means things you don't want, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. And so you got to get rid of those things before you can actually perceive spiritual reality. I'll give you a practical example. When I was young, I would come back from playing, and I said to my mother, I want to eat dinner. And she said, no, first you got to clean yourself. Then you can eat dinner. So it's the same thing. The heart has to be cleansed first before one is qualified. And the topmost level of spiritual understanding is understanding the conjugal love of the Lord with his devotees, the gopis. Now, naturally, if you're not cleansed of lust in the heart, you're going to think the conjugal love of Krishna with his most intimate devotees is just like, you know, something you're reading about in the newspaper. Hopefully not. But just like your romance with your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, it's not like that because Krishna has a spiritual body. Krishna is a spiritual body. The gopis, they're all in spiritual bodies. It's an exchange of love. There's no material sense gratification there. It's completely on a different level. So the Prakriti Sahajas, they jump. It's just like if one wants to jump over the ocean like our friend Hanuman. Right? You know Hanuman? Everybody knows him? You know? He jumped over the ocean to Lanka. Say long. And there's an interesting poem that Srila Prabhupada recited in this regard. He said, big, big monkey, big, big belly, Ceylon jumping melancholy. And I'll translate that for you. What that means is that because we don't have the power of Hanuman, if we try to jump to Ceylon with our belly or whatever, trying to imitate Hanuman, guess we fall on our faces. Ceylon jumping, melancholy. Melancholy means we become depressed. So, in other words, that's what Prakriti Sahajas are. They try to jump to a higher level, and their lust simply increases. Their bodily consciousness, what I mean by lust, bodily consciousness, desire to enjoy this body, simply increases by hearing about Radha and Krishna, dancing, this thing called, that's just like I did the swear dance the other night. Oh, or Rasengar. So, you know, just like I went to the dance the other night or whatever. Of course, I don't dance. Too old for that. So, so that's Prakriti Sahajas. In addition, you have Gauranga Nagari, who think that Lord Chaitanya, whose mood is actually that of a devotee, is in the same mood as Krishna enjoying with gopis. I mean, this completely a deviation. Another one is Saki Beki. And they think they can understand the highest rasa relationship with Krishna by men dressing up as ladies. It looks funny, but I've met many of them. And they're pretty ugly ladies. Not to offend devotees of the Lord, but I don't think any of you men are attracted to this. I don't think so. And this is what went Adivadi, which means too great, you know, thinking that they're greater than they actually are, and syncretist. That means they combine two things. The Sufis and the Tantrics and the Vaishnavas, they all mix everything together like some witches brew, like Macbeth. Boil, cauldron, whatever. Anyway, so they mix all these things from different religions or different paths, left-handed tantra, right-handed tantra, and you just get something that's just a mishmash. So that's another deviant group. We got all these. And the another one is Kartabaja, worshippers of the guru as God. What's that? What? This is, anyway. There are many people like that. I mean, in the 1960s and 70s, there was one group where it was a young man who was God, 16 years old. And he came to America, and everybody, all of the so-called followers, were saying he was God. And what happened is this God ran away with his secretary. His mother was quite upset because she wanted to arrange marriage for God. And a nice marriage between God and the goddess. And she took him to court in India. And in the court filing, she said that this son is not actually God, it's my other son, who's God rather than this God. So there's many, many, many people who come from India and other places who may declare themselves to be God. So these are the deviant groups. Another one is, of course, where they mix the Vaishnavism and some of the Buddhist Buddhist tendencies, syncretists. And so, as I mentioned before, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, prayed for the right-hand man of the Lord to come. And he came, and his name was Vimal Prasad, and which his name basically means the mercy of the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he had many signs that indicated, even at his birth, that he was a great personality. One of them was that the umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck like a Brahman thread. And he had the signs of a Mahapurusha. There's different physical signs that sometimes you can ascertain whether someone is a great personality. The type of eyes, they're like lotus petals. Do you have lotus petals? Too bad. We still like it. And then eyes probably going out to the ear, like lotus petals, and hands that are very long. There's many different signs. Other signs, that occurred, one sign occurred when he was about 5 or 6 months old. This big festival called Rath Yatra that occurs in Jagannath Puri, which is where he was born. And the cart, these are giant carts. That's where the English word juggernaut came from Jagannath. And so the carts wouldn't move. They stopped in front of his house. His mother brought him out. And the garland from the deities fell on Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, indicating that he was a great personality and had his grain ceremony there. And nobody could move the carts for 3 days. And they had a lot of people, as you see. I don't know if you can see so clearly there, but there's thousands of millions of people there and pulling the carts. When Lord Chaitanya was present over 500 years ago, the same thing happened in the exchange between him and Lord Jagannath. And the king couldn't even pull the carts with horses and elephants. Finally, Lord Chaitanya had to pull the cart, or push the cart with his head. So this was a very significant spiritual sign. And you all like mangoes, right?
Yeah.
You like mangoes. So at 3 years old, this shows his determination. I mean, most children are not very determined. Are they? No, not. Of course, Ayush is, but. So at 3 years old, he grabbed a mango, and as we know, before you eat something, what are you supposed to do?
Offer
it to Krishna. Yad karoshi yad ashnashi. What's that? So whatever Krishna says in the Gita, whatever you offer, whatever you give away should be done as an offering to me. And if you don't do that, you're verily eating what? Pop, sin. So because why is it sinful? I'll explain why. Because even eating vegetables or anything, you're taking a life. See, we say we're vegetarians in the Krishna Conscious Movement, but actually we're Krishnarians. That is, we eat whatever we can offer to Krishna. But things that can't be offered to Krishna, we don't eat. And by offering it to Krishna, then we become free from whatever karma there might have been, even from cutting down a string bean, whatever that is, or cutting a tree, or whatever. You know, when you take, for example, a mango has what inside it? A seed. So, sometimes you don't eat the seed, of course. But anyway, so everything we eat has to be offered to Krishna first. So Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, innocently, when he was a kid, he picked up a mango and ate it and wasn't offered to Krishna. His father, just in a very mild way, his father didn't say, "Hey, you're a demon! Karma!" His father didn't say that. No, his father said, "You know, before you eat something, you should offer it to Krishna, my dear son." And he took that instruction so seriously, he took a vow never eat a mango for the rest of his life. So even when he was like 40, 50 years old, his disciples offered him a mango. And he says, "No, too fallen." This is determination. As Krishna describes in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Dhridavrata, you know those? Vyavasayatna ka buddhya reke ka kuranandana bahushaktas tunantasya. Okay, so and abhagaishvare prasatana ayapurta chetasam vyavasayatna ka buddhya samadho napatiyate. So we have to have this determination to be spiritually conscious, and you don't expect a child to have it, but Bhakti Sananta Saraswati had it. At 7 years old, he was given a deity of Kurmadev, the tortoise incarnation. The Lord appears in every species of life. And so the tortoise incarnation of Krishna is considered to be the presiding deity of the nectarian ocean of spiritual taste, bhakti ras. 7 years old, he memorizes Bhagavad Gita. Wow. What about you? I get it. And at 11 years old, he went preaching, was giving lectures. He had a photographic memory. In fact, the way he perfected his English was that he memorized the dictionary. He just sat down, memorized every single word in the dictionary, and some of the words he used, many of us, including me, cannot understand without consulting a dictionary. And even Srila Prabhupada said that he couldn't understand much of the language, the English language of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Never studied. His teachers criticized him. Why aren't you paying attention? And he said, I am. Just test me. And they tested him. He did perfectly. As I said, a living encyclopedia. And he developed his own shorthand. At 11 years old, you know him? I gotta be careful about these PowerPoints. At 11 years old, he debated a very famous astrologer about astrology, and the astrologer was so upset that he had to go to the bathroom afterwards. He defeated him. 13 years old, he took initiation from his father in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and also the Nishinga Mantra. Nishinga Mantra is very important. Not only for one's own physical protection, but for helping us get rid of the anarthas, the unwanted things we mentioned before that we have in our hearts. And then at 16 years old, he established his whole movement, basically, an August assembly in which everyone who was a member was supposed to take a lifetime vow of complete dedication, celibacy to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he was the only one who remained. Such determination. He went to college in 1892-95, but left at the end so he wouldn't get entangled. Studied astrology, became very, very expert, as I mentioned before, and published a book, a commentary on the Surya Siddhanta, which is the authoritative Vedic text on astrology. And also, he published a calendar, that's the Navadvip Panjika, which tells about the different appearance days and disappearance days of great personalities, including Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this calendar, of course, is a moon-based calendar, for those of you who don't know about the Vedic calendar. Actually, all the traditional calendars in the world were moon-based. The Jewish people had a moon-based calendar. All traditional cultures actually had a moon-based calendar, because the moon was considered very important. And the moon cycles are such that every few years you've got to add a month just to make it coincide more or less with the sun calendar. So you have an extra month. What's that month called? Navratri. Purushottam Mas. So that's going to occur next year. And in 1895 to 1905, he worked for the king of Tripura, and he established honest dealings, which at that time in India, of course, there was a lot of bribery and other dishonesty that was going on. He was extremely honest. And in 1898, he stayed in Jagannath Puri, the place of Lord Jagannath, and gave classes on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And because he was so determined to establish the actual principles of religion, he opposed a very popular preacher at that time who was named Radhacharan Das Babaji, who had invented his own mantra, which I'm not going to teach you. He invented his own mantra, and it created a riot in Jagannath Puri, and his father had to take him away out of Jagannath Puri just to save his son's life. But this shows his determination to stick to his principles, the principles of religiosity and the spiritual principles, principles of religiosity like cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, austerity, which are the legs of the bull upon which all religion stands. No matter what your religion is, these are four basic religious principles: cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. So he was determined with that, and he was determined to present the higher aspects of the spiritual philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So in order to set an example, he showed us the necessity of accepting a spiritual master. His father, of course, recommended Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was an eternally liberated servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was very determined not to accept any disciples. And so when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went to him and said, will you accept me as your disciple? He said, well, first of all, I have to ask Lord Chaitanya. So come back again some other day. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came back another day, and he said, did you ask Lord Chaitanya? And his spiritual master said, I forgot. And then he came back another day, and his spiritual master said, Lord Chaitanya said no. And so he was so determined. He actually said that, you know, if you can't accept me, my life is worthless. And so determined that his spiritual master initiated him and gave him the name Sri Avarshavanabhi Devi Dayi Toyadas, which means the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the Lord's eternal consort. One of the first things he did after taking initiation was compile Encyclopedia of Vaishnava histories or biographies, and also the philosophy of Krishna, philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But he became enthusiastic. He always was enthusiastic to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. So he understood in order to do that, he had to take sannyas. At that time, in our particular sampradaya, sannyas meant dressing as a babaji, which means like a lungi or a gamsha, longer gamsha. And it's really not respected that much in India. In India at that particular juncture, and also today, the saffron cloth is respected. And that, in order to, let's say, take sannyas externally appearing in a different way than our sampradaya had its tradition, he went to South India and studied with the Ramanuja Sampradaya, the Sri Sampradaya, to study their type of sannyas. And he adapted that to the society, to his society. In order to get the potency to preach, he vowed to chant a billion names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means 192 rounds a day. That's a lot of rounds. Did you ever chant that?
No? I was wondering, isn't it really a billion? 192
times? A billion? No, no. To chant. So it ultimately reached that number. It's not a billion.
Not in a day.
Not in bed. No, no. He, and he was living in the hut, and he was so austere, he didn't even fix the roof of his hut. So it was leaking, and he had to hold sometimes an umbrella over his head. He didn't want to take any time doing anything else other than connecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his chanting. Of course, ultimately, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him and said, no, now it's time to go out and preach. So he went out and preached, and he initiated his first disciple, and he was dreaming that his first disciple was being attacked by all these deviant sects, which we mentioned previously, in the form of a tiger. And so he, in this mood of saving his disciple, because this is actually the mood of a preacher of Krishna consciousness, that we see everybody as being devoured by the tiger, either in material existence or improper understanding or offenses or whatever. So when you see someone suffering or someone endangered, you automatically become enthusiastic to help them. Like one time, the devotees were doing this Rath Yatra ceremony, and there was a lady in danger. There was a burning house. So the devotees took the canopy from the Rath Yatra immediately and said to the lady, jump. And she jumped. I think there were several people who jumped. So, and he gave specific references from the four Vedas on Lord Chaitanya's activities, pastimes, and the mantra, Lord Chaitanya's mantra, which is Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shivaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda, which has references in the Atharva Veda and other original Vedas. And then there was this other deviant Vaishnava sect that I mentioned before, which was the caste Brahmins. Everyone remembers that? That means those who are born in Brahmin families must actually be more spiritual than those born in any other family. And, of course, this caste system led to a lot of abuses in India and discrimination against people. And we mentioned in a previous class, it also led to losing many people to other religions in India, because there were a group of people called the outcasts who were considered like untouchables or whatever, and they had no refuge, and so they naturally took refuge in other societies and other religions. So there was this whole discussion going on in 1911, as far as who is superior, these caste brahmanas or people who've taken to Vaishnavism, religion, and are very devoted to God. And so this is a philosophical discussion. You have to understand, in India, religious disputes were not settled with bombs and terrorism. They had a unique method of settling religious disputes. They talked. Isn't that unique? You know, no terrorist attacks or anything. They talked, they argued, philosophical discussions, brought out their books, quoted from the books. And so he went into this discussion. And first, he was always very intelligent, but first he had a very interesting strategy. He began to glorify these caste Brahmins. And the caste Brahmins were thinking, yeah, he's on our side. They let down their guard. And then he started quoting from the Shastra how Vaishnavas were automatically Brahmins. People worship God. Brahmin means one on the spiritual platform, one who knows Brahman, one who knows God, one who knows spirit. And so they were devastated. He won the argument. No violence. But people were so impressed that they wanted to touch his feet. That's the method in India of respecting someone. And so the police, they wanted to protect him, because obviously if you have a lot of people who are worshiping you or want to touch your feet, it's not so good for your feet. Because everybody's grabbing. It's like in the 1960s, there was this one musical group called the Beatles. And there were thousands of people who would have loved to attack them and take parts of their body away. And so the police had to protect them. So in the same way in India, when you have someone who's a sadhu, you have to have people protect you. So the police, in order to protect him and to allow the people to touch his feet, dunked him in some water. And they took that water and they sprayed it on everybody. So he was so much respected for carrying out that philosophical discussion. 1911, he published a book establishing the Vedic basis for accepting Lord Chaitanya. Now, Vedic, let's talk about what the word Vedic means. In different contexts, the word Vedic can mean different things. But generally, people consider Vedic to mean the four Vedas. You know, the Brahma, Yajur, Yajna, and Samaveda. And so he, in order to prove the authenticity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to encourage people to accept, he had to prove Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's position in terms of these four Vedas. Of course, there are more Vedas. These four Vedas are called Shruti. There's more Vedas than that. There's the Smriti, Itihasas, and other literatures like that. In fact, in the original four Vedas, what we say original four Vedas, there's this interesting verse, Itihasa Purananam Panchama Veda Uchite, that the original four Vedas consider the Puranas and the histories like Mahabharata and Ramayana to be part of the Vedas. That's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes you find these Vedic scholars say, oh, Vedas only means the four Vedas. But it means the Upanishads and all these other supplementary literatures that are also compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the same author. So he established that in a very erudite way. And people got very upset with him, because when you threaten people's livelihood, let me explain what I mean by that. The caste Brahmins, they had a monopoly. Monopoly doesn't mean they play that game when we were young, you know, Monopoly, pass park plays, you know, go to jail, whatever. Monopoly means they have an exclusive right to conduct religious ceremonies. And religious ceremonies, you get paid for. Like if you do a Griha Pravesh, what's the price for Griha Pravesh? $500. So, I'm just making that up. That means a housewarming ceremony. You don't want a house. Well, that's how much we'll charge you. So, talk to your husband. So if you do a housewarming ceremony, I mean, I'm just making up a price there, obviously. Then you have a price list. So the Brahmin comes to your house and says, you know, we can do a $10 blessing for your son or a $100 blessing for your son. And you really can't call anyone else because there's a monopoly. You know, he has an exclusive right. So people got very upset that he was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was actually tearing apart this monopoly and enabling not only people from what they consider to be lower caste to become Brahmins, but from people from so-called lower caste to become sannyasis. I mean, what to speak if they saw us today, you know. I'm from America and I'm a sannyasi, so I'd be in trouble. So there were two conspiracies to kill him, because when you interfere with someone's business, what do? Kill him. Not saying that you should do that. But that's what that was the system. So one time they attempted to poison him in a king's palace, and he understood that. He refused to eat. He only took a tulsi leaf. Another time, and he was not allowed to speak at all. Another time he was on pilgrimage and they bribed one of the police. They didn't dress exactly like that. They bribed the police chief, actually. And the police chief refused to accept the bribe. That's unique. He said, ordinarily, no problem. We'll accept bribes, arrange for you to kill people, no problem. But this is a great saint. And another time, he had to actually put on the dress of another disciple, of one of his disciples, to escape from one of these conspiracies. And very enthusiastically established the first printing press in the Gaudiya Math in Calcutta, publishing a daily magazine. And he was asked, how can you publish a daily magazine or a daily newspaper about spiritual things? He says, well, the news in the spiritual world is unlimited. The news in the material world is stereotypical. It repeats. Like if you pick up a newspaper today or a newspaper 10 years ago, it's just changed the names. I mean, there's some unique things, but it's kind of boring. Oh, wait, sorry. So in 1914, his father disappeared and his spiritual master disappeared. In 1915, and there was fighting for the memorial, which is called the Samadhi, of a spiritual master, because anyone who had this money, this is also a pecuniary or a financial concern, because anybody who has the memorial makes more money, more people come to your temple, right? So what happened is that he said to all the people who were fighting him, he said, okay, any of you who have not had illicit life for 1 year can take this samadhi. Nobody came forward. And he said, anyone who has not had illicit life for 6 months, then he went back to 1 month, 2 weeks, and then finally 3 days, nobody came forward. So he said, all right, I get the samadhi. The Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya's associates, appeared to him in his dream to preach. In 1918, he took sannyas, established the first temple in Calcutta, and he lived, first he lived on the roof of another building and went door to door to preach Krishna consciousness. In 1922, he met our spiritual master's divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, in Calcutta. And he told Prabhupada at the first meeting, your educated young boys, referring to him as a group of young boys, you should preach Chaitanya's message in English, which meant the Western world as well as India. And Prabhupada got his instruction. Prabhupada first objected a little bit. He said, who will hear Lord Chaitanya's message while India is still a captive nation? Because Prabhupada was a member of Gandhi's movement. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur basically destroyed that argument, saying that actually we're all captives of Maya. and nobody's free. Nobody's liberated except for those who are liberated spiritually. So in 1919, he installed the deity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Godrumdweep, which is near Mayapur. Gave lectures condemning, there's a nice monkey there, condemning using the deity to make money, because that's the same thing that many of these deviant groups, especially the ritualistic brahmanas or the caste brahmanas, their primary interest was in making money. Of course, if someone's primary interest is in making money, they're not a brahman. Because a Brahmin has to be voluntarily austere, samadhamak, tapakshocham, etc. He has to embrace poverty and the fact of not really owning anything. He could use things in Krishna's service. So he gave this lecture and he compared using the deity to make money with using a shalagram shila, which is a sacred incarnation of Krishna, to crack nuts with. And there's a monkey doing it. established a temple in Mayapur. This is the four sampradayas he glorified in this temple. And I'm not going to read this, but this is his first Vyas Puja. In 1924, he accepted his first worship. Again, he was attacked. His party was attacked when they went around the holy dome of Navadweep. They were throwing stones at his party. In 1926, he sent sannyasis out to preach all over India to spread Krishna consciousness, established an English newspaper, established what's called Padatirthas. That means places where he installed the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the wherever Lord Chaitanya visited in his tour of India. And as we went around India, we visited many of those places too and saw those lotus feet that were installed by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In 1930, he established diorama exhibits to preach Krishna consciousness. Also established a very large temple, Bhagbazara Temple in Calcutta. And here he is with some of his disciples and followers. Established examinations on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhoma, and sent disciples to the West, and he compared them to Hanuman flying across the ocean. And 1935, R. Srila Prabhupada wrote his Vyas Puja offering to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sort of summarizing his whole mood in preaching Krishna consciousness. Absolute ascension thou hast proved, and personal calamity thou hast moved. What that means is the absolute supreme personality of Godhead has senses. He's a person. And naturally, you know, in India at that time, and of course, practically everybody who studies Hinduism in the university will be taught that the Vedic philosophy is the absolute truth is simply impersonal. It's just energy. And you can either merge into him or become one with him, or you are him or her, whatever. Can't say the absolute truth of him or her in that particular way. It. Use the word it. And so that's a calamity. Why is it? Because that's atheism. Atheism means to deny God's existence. And if you say the absolute truth is just a light, that's denying his existence. You know, if I say to you, you don't exist. You're just an illusion. You're just a bunch of molecules. Your body is. And atoms. And that's an insult. So that's atheism. So this was Srila Prabhupada's summary of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's intention and mood. And 1935, Srila Prabhupada meets his spiritual master, Radhakund, and he got these instructions from his spiritual master that if you ever get money, print and distribute books. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was asked by some of his other disciples as to whether Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, should join his moth as a full-time member, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said no. Leave him alone, and in due course of time, he will do everything. So he actually recognized who Srila Prabhupada was. And, read that. And so in 1936, the last year of intense preaching, and I'll read this. This is his last letter to our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. I'm fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people who are not conversant with the languages of the other members. That means people in the West, obviously. This will do much good to yourself as well as to your audience. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher if you serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the people in general, as well as philosophers and religionists. And that was received like a fortnight before he left this world, giving Prabhupada his last instruction. These are last instructions to disciples. I'm not going to read that, but they'll read this. You should always chant the transcendental name of Godhead with patience and forbearance, like a tree in humbleness, like a straw. There are many amongst you who are well-qualified and able workers. We have no other desire whatsoever. As I mentioned, he's called the Singha Guru, chastise the cheaters. He ref- formed Gaudiya Vaishnavism on the order and the prayer of his father, Sri Bhakti Vinod Thakur. In this way, he preached against deviant Vaishnav sects. He met with different acharyas, scholars, and leaders of all types, and was never defeated. He unified these four sampradayas, which is very important, the Lakshmi Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya, Kumara Sampradaya, and the Brahma Sampradaya, by stressing the points in which we all agreed and stressing Lord Chaitanya's teachings of achincha, veda, veda tattva. That means how everything is one and different simultaneously from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he established 64 temples, Gaudiya Vaishnava temples, and also temples that he started, centers in London and Germany, and Rangoon, also in Burma. Four printing presses, thousands of books, edition of the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Bhagavat in English, Chaitanya Mangal, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahma Samhita, and edited his father's books. He established Parikrama, which means walking around the holy Dham. Found many pilgrimage places, wrote 108 essays and books and hundreds of articles, made an institution, set up the institution that Srila Prabhupada, and at least the groundwork or the foundation for the institution that Srila Prabhupada later developed. And he used modern technology, cars, radios, boats, sewn cloth, etc., which was highly unlikely or unusual for a sannyasi at that particular time. Because generally the sannyasis were supposed to just reside in a holy place and live very simply and not wear sewn clothing, not cross the ocean, and certainly not have radios or anything like that. And he sent sannyasis overseas, which is quite unique, and used non-spiritual people, engaged everybody in Krishna consciousness, created many displays to illustrate Krishna consciousness, and he was expert in engaging Maya, Krishna's illusory energy, in Krishna's service. Established the three varieties of Krishna conscious understanding. Sambandha, Videya, Prayojana. Sambandha means understand the relationship between the different aspects of the Lord and his energies. Videya means the process of devotional service. And finally, Prayojana, the ultimate goal of devotional service. And in order to do that, he stressed kirtan, especially what we call the Brihad Murdanga, which means book distribution and book publication. And the holy names, as his own personal example was, he chanted a billion names. And he wanted to establish Varnashram, a Daivi Varnashram. Daivi Varnashram means you divide society according to their quality and their work, the people according to their qualities and works. So that's very important. So that people will be doing what they like to do, will be enthusiastic, and fit together very nicely to form a functional society. That's Varnashram. And wrote different papers, many things he did. And we mentioned before, he took the Mayavadi saffron and Sridandi for his own sannyasis, criticized existing so-called renunciates, and created a sannyas brotherhood. So there's many, many other aspects here. I don't think we have time to go through everything. So Bhagavati Diksha, which means the Siksha Sampradaya, rather than Diksha Sampradaya. In 1937, he left this world, and of course, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, is his predominant or preeminent follower who has spread Krishna consciousness under his directions all over the world. And Prabhupada said, before writing these books, I never wrote before. Swamiji told me, I wondered, how will I do it? In other words, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Prabhupada to do it, and Prabhupada was wondering how I will do it. He's never wrote before. So this shows that the order of the spiritual master has within it the success potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I just sat down and repeated what I had heard from my spiritual master. I did not invent. If I'm satisfied, it's because I've delivered the message as it is without any concoctions. And that was Srila Prabhupada. All right? So that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Anybody have any questions about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Questions? Yes, Rishikesh.
Did he have any Western disciples?
Yes. Yes, in Germany, there was a disciple, I forget his name right now. He had some Western disciples. And also in London, there was a lady, Vinod Vani, who the devotees later on visited. So he had some Western disciples that were initiated by his devotees who were there. And actually, the German disciple actually came to India to be with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this German disciple has a few present-day followers. Of course, this German disciple passed away, but he has a few present-day followers in his branch of the disciplic succession, yes. So, any other questions? So it's nice to glorify a great personality like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So thank you very much. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada. All glorious to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada ki jai. And so, where's our hostess? So I think there's prasadam now. Is that right? Okay. So, the master of ceremonies is not here.
One of the devotees should lead the prasadam prayers.
Okay.
Mahaprasadam.